Well, our first guest today is from North Platte Planning Commission. He is David Fudge. He is a longtime member of this community. Knowledgeable in a lot of areas. Boy, I can about throw anything at you, and you can give me a good informed answer.
I don't know about that. It is Dress Western Friday, though. I have to put a plug for my Nebraska Land-based friends.
It's
first Dress Western Friday. The festival's like 45 days away. It's crazy.
Oh, okay. All right. Already gearing up, getting in Nebraska Land-based mode.
Yep. So, good excuse to wear jeans and boots to the bank today. So,
be
good.
Yeah, we like that. And a lot of businesses have a casual Friday deal. Around here, it's casual most of the time. Unless the big boss from Wisconsin is visiting.
Something like that, yeah.
Kind of perk up a little bit.
Understood,
I think I need to wear at least a polo shirt.
Exactly.
But no, that's really... That's kind of the society we live in. We want to talk about the Planning Commission's meeting the other night and kind of couple that, even though you're not on the Community Redevelopment Authority, but a lot of folks perk up when they hear these big developments planned and this Newberry Village recommendation. Both the bodies, one you're on, the Planning Commission and the CRA yesterday met and recommended it go on to council without any opposition. Everybody voted for it. Now, I know you were missing three at your meeting the other night, but 6-0 on the vote there, and the CRA looked it over and said, we like it too, so it'll appear on the council agenda on Tuesday. First of all, I thought, give a little bit of overview of TIF financing, because we hear so much about TIF. Most people pay attention to it a little bit, know that it stands for tax increment financing.
Right.
You just explained it before we opened the mics on this, and I thought that was a really good explanation that folks that are listening to us would like to hear.
Sure. So let's imagine for a moment that I have a lot, an empty bare lot right now, and it's I pay $1,000 a year in property tax for that lot. And it happens to sit in a blighted or substandard area, and I want to develop that lot. And it's so I go through and get a plan put together, and everybody determines that at the end of this, my $1,000 a year in property tax on that empty lot today, I'll now be paying $4,500 property tax per year at the end of the development. And so I enter into a contract with the city, and the city issues me a bond. And the increment in tax increment financing is the delta between that $1,000 a year I'm paying now in property tax and the $4,500 a year I'll be paying in property tax at the end of the development. And so the program is really designed to refund that $3,500 in property tax growth that happens between what I'm paying today and what I'll be paying at the end of my development over a period not to exceed 15 years in most cases. There is a 20-year window for the extreme blight areas, which we do have some in our community, until that bond has been repaid. In other words, I can use that money for things like infrastructure improvements, things that will go with the lot long term if I no longer own that lot at some point in the future. So you think about most of our large developments, including this one, there's a significant amount of electrical infrastructure, plumbing infrastructure, sewage infrastructure, road infrastructure that has to be installed in order for the development to take place. And those are an example of the sorts of costs that I can recover through tax increment financing. Mm-hmm. So the county, so when I write that $4,500 check, the taxing authorities keep that $1,000 that I was paying today, and they refund the $3,500 delta between what I was paying today and what I am paying now to me for a period. Let's say my TIF bond is for $10,000. So they refund that $3,500 to me for a period not to exceed 15 years or until that bond is repaid. So in other words, I've recouped the eligible costs. And then I keep writing that $4,500 check, and we all know those checks never get smaller, generally speaking, in property tax world. Right. Then I keep writing those checks beyond when the bond is repaid, and the county gets to keep, the taxing authorities get to keep all of it.
Okay.
So the common misconception about TIF is, well, it's costing taxpayers money. I get that argument, but I also would counter-argue not really, because you're still getting the same amount of money from me that you were getting before I decided to develop it. The difference is I'm getting reimbursed for some of my hard expenses for installing infrastructure that'll last, 50 to 100 years. In some cases, not in all cases, but in some cases, so that I can get made whole on some of the development costs, because otherwise trying to do some of these large developments is just fiscally impossible. It's just just the reality of it.
That's good explanation. I think gives people a fuller picture of what it involves, all the different aspects of it. The article that came out in the Telegraph pointed out some things as well. So we've got Chief Industries, and they are the one that they planned this Newberry Village Mobile Home Park. And it's a 43-acre site north and east of East Phillip and Bicentennial Avenues. So this just the TIF money that they're getting, which will they're requesting $1.27 million, helps reimburse them as they're putting this in.
Right. And so, and the hard part of these sorts of things for developers, and what we see a lot of times in the world I live in now, is it's very difficult to get to a point where you can start getting reimbursed on these TIF bonds, because you have to front all the cash for that development. So a developer still has to go in and put all this stuff in before they get anything back on the tax increment. Right. So, and the other thing that kind of has to happen is the increased valuation has to occur. So you have to put it in, then you have to get the valuation set at the higher level before you can start recovering any TIF. That's why so many times we see, let's take the one out in the Fritz Farm subdivision, which is the one out on Phillip Street, Phillip and Francis, basically, back at, you see those big apartment complexes going up out there. That's why so often we see multifamily structures go up in TIF developments first, because it's much easier when you get that kind of critical mass going to start recouping some of your costs, development costs, through the TIF bond. So that's kind of the way that happens generally. And this one's going to be, they're going to wait a while to get some of this increment back on this, because you're talking about individual single family homes that are going to be installed over a period of maybe, 10 years as this thing fills up. Maybe not. Maybe it'll go quicker. Maybe it'll go slower. But it's very difficult. It'll be a slower ramp up for them to start recouping some of their expenses through the TIF bond.
This, from the headline I saw after the CRA met yesterday, first mobile home development in North Platte since 1971. That's
been a
just
very
incredible
long
time.
Yeah,
that
it's been a very long time.
Well, that'd be 55 years.
Yeah. And so the other kind of thing that caught everybody's attention here about 30 days ago when we first saw it was there was a change that was made to the code for the development of a mobile home park, which basically the old code basically said you got to build a HUD approved shelter.
Right.
Frank, I think the capacity has to be or had to be 2 or 2.5 bodies for every unit that you had. Mm-hmm. Well, in a development of this size, which is 200 and some?
It says 247 all new single wide manufactured homes.
Right. So think about the number of people that you'd have to be able to put in a building, and then start doing the math on how big that structure would have to be. So one of the things that we did at the Planning Commission, and then the council agreed with us, was to say they could either build that shelter or they could basically put these things on a foundation the same way that a stick-built home would be placed on a foundation and essentially make them as safe as a single family home would be that was stick built on site. Mm-hmm. And we agreed with that. Now, it's important to note that HUD changed their standard for how these things were to be installed back in, I believe it was about 1998. But because we haven't had to address this as a community in so long, as you mentioned, over 50 years, we still had that old language in our code. So I can also tell you there's a exhaustive process we're going through now at the city that is going to will basically completely redo the planning and zoning ordinances in the city of North Platte. Mm-hmm. It's got started late last year, maybe even earlier than that. Councilman Voles and myself, along with all city planning and zoning staff, have been reviewing this stuff for a period of about 2 months. It's 270 pages or something like that. And we've removed altogether the requirement, as many of our peer communities have in the Midwest, for any sort of HUD shelter going forward, because or a FEMA-approved shelter, I'm sorry, FEMA-approved shelter going forward, because frankly, they're all installed, they're all required to be installed, and have anything new that's been installed in the last 10 or 15 years have all been bolted to a foundation anyway. So we kind of had an older section of our city code that hadn't been updated because we just frankly haven't had to deal with this for so long.
Right.
So, but anyway, that's a rather exhaustively long answer to your initial question about where this thing is.
Well, it's you know, we'll see what the council does. It seems like it's going to go forward. It's going to be a good thing. The most often mentioned thing in my time here talking to people, especially Gary Pearson, is the need for housing. It's pretty evident with the influx that we've had, sustainable beef, mm-hmm. among others, and now the Amazon Center firing up too, that's probably the biggest need of North Platte right now.
Well, so, moreover, not just housing, but affordable housing.
Affordable housing, yes.
And affordable is kind of a moving goalpost, and that definition tends to change over time. But what hasn't changed is we don't have a lot of housing stock in the 150 and down range. And I can tell you this because I've got a daughter who's been trying to purchase a home.
Yep.
And she's a young person who's got a good job, and she's eligible to buy a home, but finding something that isn't completely run down in her price range is difficult. Yep. And so this will provide an option for people who are locating the town, who either need a first landing spot, right? I'm moving to town. I have one of these jobs at the beef plant, or I have one of these jobs in Amazon, or I have one of the jobs that may get created at some point out at the rail park, and I need some place to live now. I don't care what it is. I gotta have something now, and here's what I can afford. Well, this gives them another option to be able to say, well, here's a single family unit. In most cases, these things, I believe, are going to be three bedroom, bath and a half or something like that, or two baths. A good starter home. Foot in the door to ownership in the marketplace that they can then transition out of as they get more established in the community and start building some equity in some of these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've taken up most of our time with appeared as your last public hearing at the meeting, so we'll just have to hit the highlights. Anything else you think that people will be interested with on the rezoning items that you dealt with?
There was the one that had my attention probably the most, and we spent a considerable amount of time debating, was there was a request, and I can't remember the agenda item number, but in the Fritz Farm subdivision, basically as you're going east on Francis Street, at the corner of Francis and Bryan, and I think it's the Brewer subdivision, if you look at it on there, there was a request to flip three lots from A1 transitional ag to B2 highway commercial district.
That was item six,
And that had my attention. So everybody needs to understand the difference between a B1 and a B2. B1, business one, would be like what you'd see office spaces or a lawyer's office or a bank or things like that. When you open it up to B2 commercial highway, that opens up everything you can do in B1, plus a whole bunch of other stuff like gas stations, convenience stores,
things with car a lot dealerships. More activity,
yes, 100%.
Right? Yeah.
And so I went into that meeting pretty firmly opposed to putting that sort of a zoning area right there, basically, because if you think about how Francis is developed, if you go from Dewey east on Francis, you're going to go by, you know, the mall and the Walmart parking mm-hmm. lot entrance, and then you're going to go a little further, and there's a kidney mm-hmm. treatment facility over there, and Allo's over there, and then you've got another commercial building going in over there, and then you've got a cell tower. But then after that, it converts pretty quickly to housing. And the further you further east you go, it just keeps converting to more and more housing. And so in my mind, to go from commercial to housing, back to commercial, and then back right back into housing didn't feel very good, especially on a B2. And especially considering there's more commercial development in that Fritz Farm subdivision, the further you go out, once Francis gets extended out to the current industrial park, there's some commercial stuff that gets developed in there. Mm-hmm. And so the commission basically forwarded a recommendation to the council to flip those lots, not from B2, but to B1. It was not a unanimous vote. There was quite a bit of discussion on it, and so people need to be aware that is being looked at right there. And it's been so long since we've had a large new development like that in our community that these are the sorts of things that we see come forward. People have ideas about how that ought to be developed, and our job as the planning commission is to say, well, is that really a good idea or not? Right. Does that really fit with what we're trying to get accomplished as a community over there? And so the commission did forward that recommendation to council. If people want to have more input on that, the council will be taking that up on Tuesday, and I encourage people to go to the council meeting.
Okay. And finally, I want to ask you about the regulations regarding food truck vendors.
Didn't talk about it at all.
Tabled that?
Tabled that, basically. Okay. She's kind of kept that on the agenda just to keep it in our minds, okay. But there was really nothing new. She left it on there in case anything needed discussed. We were about an hour 45 on the first part of that agenda, and so I suspect, and frankly, the first part of this agenda took up the lion's share of planning, zoning, and city attorney time for the last month. We do have some ideas on how to get some of that stuff done on food trucks. We've talked about it here, and I suspect we'll see that in short order.
Okay. Very interesting. Did you, on the other items, were they all passed and they forwarded on to the council?
They were all passed. The other one that generated quite a bit of discussion was the Second Street rezoning to B2. Again, that was a split vote. It wasn't unanimous. Ironically, we just did one of these last month that the council kicked back at us. And so there was quite a bit of discussion about what the real intent was out there on East Second Street. But this one actually does abut B2. Some of us thought that it was a better fit at B1, and I think the developer actually has a B1 use in mind. However, because there's so much B2 already in that area, they proposed it as a B2 to avoid what we call spot zoning, where you have this little block of one thing surrounded by a whole bunch of other stuff.
Right.
So that went through. Well, again, wasn't unanimous, and the council will take that up on Tuesday.
Okay. Sounds good. David Fudge, our guest on the first half of this Friday, May 1st, Mugs in the Morning. We appreciate you, sir, and you got your meeting scheduled for the fourth Tuesday of May.
Yeah, it would be, if I'm looking over your head there, it'd be May 26th. Mm-hmm. Okay. Will be our next Planning Commission meeting, and we'll see what gets done on the agenda.
Right after the Memorial Day holiday weekend there.
You bet.
So got to have your ducks in a row there. Going right out of that to a Planning Commission meeting. We'll schedule you on later that week. Appreciate your time, sir. Have a great weekend.
Of course. You do the same.